This recording is a production of Faith Builders Resource Group. This presentation was recorded at Teachers Week 2022, held at Faith Builders on August 2 through 5.
Good morning. We live in a deafeningly loud world, don't we? And the noise isn't just physical noise. We feel the noise. Not just hear the noise, we sense the noise in our spirit. From the time we wake up in the morning to that piercing alarm clock until we fall exhausted on our beds at night, there's noise surrounding us, calling for our attention, calling for our loves, calling for our time. And our days are this broken rhythm of noise, especially maybe as teachers. And you know, some of that noise is delightful. It's noise we should be paying attention to. We should be noticing. It's beautiful. Some of it is a part of the natural rhythms of our day. Some of it is given for our pleasure. Some of it we choose to fill our days. Remember in the first session, I mentioned my friend who puts his earbuds in while he drives. And remember how that thought terrified me, because I rely on my ears to sense what is going on around me, even while I'm driving. It seems so unsafe to be putting headphones or earbuds into my ears while driving. Headphones have this way of stunting our awareness of what's right around us. But then the convicting illumination is that perhaps in a similar way, noise in our life has been stunting us from an awareness of the things right around us, of the needs right around us, of the needs within us. You know, some of that noise we even seek to add to our days, maybe as a way of trying to mask those needs. Peter Kraft says, our headphones keep us so filled with artificial noise that we do not hear the deafening silence at the heart of it all. This morning we're going to start by talking briefly about some distractions. Distractions in your life. Think about your life. What are some common distractions of noise in your life? They may or may not be of value or differing levels of value. But they distract you from what you're doing. You're doing one thing, and the noise draws you away. It distracts you from what you had purposed to do. And so I think about this in a bunch of different categories. First, I think about it as distractions of sound, the obvious one that maybe our minds always go to first when we think of noise. Distractions of sound. And of course, the noise of sound can be a lawnmower, it could just be the room noise, you know. It could be selected noise. This is the music you turn on in your car or the radio. It can be audiobooks. You know, I remember a time not so long ago, I gave these talks last summer at a Teachers Week up in Ontario, and as I was preparing for them, I was doing some jogging and stuff. And I was listening to audiobooks oftentimes when I was jogging. And it struck me one night when I didn't have an audiobook downloaded and I was ready to go on my jog. And my wife mentioned something about, aren't you talking about silence? Like maybe you don't need an audiobook. And so I didn't bother downloading a book that night and I just ran in silence instead. Distractions of sound, of noise. But then there's other distractions. Distractions of emotion. You know, fear is a distraction. You set out to talk to a parent about their child, but then you start like thinking through all the what-if questions, and fear distracts you from the purpose you had set out. Maybe you never even go and talk with them. Anger can be a distraction. You're upset at someone. You're angry. You know, even excitement can be a distraction. Sometimes we're so looking forward to something. Maybe it's a really good thing. And yet it's acting as a distraction from what I'm supposed to be doing right now, where I'm supposed to be present right now, giving right now. So even emotions such as excitement can act as distraction in the wrong time. And then, of course, we have distractions of body. Hungry. Man, I'm hungry. You say, I'm going to go do my devotions, but I'm just going to quick grab a snack first. And somehow that leads into something else and something else. Distractions of body. Tiredness. I'm going to pray about this big thing that's coming up. I'll pray while I'm lying down. Health. Health can be an incredible distraction. You know, a couple of years ago I had mentioned here that a couple of years ago I had dealt with some minor stomach issues. And I was experiencing like acid reflux and heartburn and stuff like that. And just not knowing what that was, not knowing what was causing it or what was all going on there, that was a distraction, a major distraction. It always was kind of there on my mind. Found it hard to focus on what I was supposed to be doing right now. Distractions of body, pain can be a distraction. And then distractions of spirit. Temptation distracts. Apathy distracts. Do you know that guilt can be a distraction? You know, guilt is a good thing. It's by design. It's similar to what pain is to your physical body. But if you've repented of your sin and you wanna walk alongside that other person, that student or that youth from your church in some of the struggle that they're working with, but then you think about your own inadequacies and, man, I still struggle with that, or I still, and it paralyzes you from actually doing what you're supposed to do. It can actually keep you from doing the very thing you're supposed to do. And so it's probably misplaced guilt or misunderstanding of God's forgiveness. Distraction of spirit. So what makes a distraction bad or negative? What are some principles of how to determine the worth of a distraction? You know, what assessment tool do we have? And there's all sorts of elaborate rubrics, I'm sure, that you as teachers can and have already built up for yourself. Here's one called a wisdom pyramid that I came across a number of years ago, where, you know, the foundation is the Bible, and then the next most important thing in my life is going to be the church, and so forth. And as it shrinks, that also should be an indicator on how much time I'm investing in it or whatever. There's lots of elaborate rubrics, and you could do that. But perhaps there's one thing we could do. Perhaps a big pyramid or rubric just feels complicated. Blaise Pascal suggests a much simpler method. All of man's problems, he says, stem from his inability to sit quietly in a room alone. Maybe that feels too simplistic. I suspect it might actually be surprising how many things become clear, how many other things diminish as we sit in silence, the clarifying light of silence. You know, I'm going to talk just for a few minutes about technology, the distraction of technology. And I suppose that if we were to give a category of where distraction comes to us, we might say technology provides the highest level of distraction in our world. And probably some of you have wished to kind of move back to this distraction-free age before, you know, the digital world existed or whatever. And the reality is, and I think it's good for us to stop and think about, is that that time period never existed distraction-free. While devices have added, you know, new layers of distraction, different angles to it, the tendency to search out distraction, to allow distraction to fill our lives, has always existed. It's always been around. And just as distractions have always existed, they're always going to. They're not going to disappear. They won't go away. And so you shouldn't be thinking in terms of how do I eradicate distraction. You should be thinking in terms of how do I manage distraction. They're going to be a part of your life. And so I offer a few guiding principles specifically for thinking about technology as a primary distraction, but it could apply to other distractions in your life as well. The first one is establish limits. You decide the time parameters you're going to spend with your technology. You decide on the amount of time that you're going to interact with it instead of it deciding it for you. You know, if you don't do the establishing, it will take more than you want to give it. You won't believe how often or how much more you use it than you think you might use it. A second principle is to fast from it. Set it aside. Maybe make it a regular fast. I know a man who every Wednesday is an internet-free day. He just doesn't go on the internet on Wednesdays. So set it aside. Try to live free of it. You can think about this as spaces in every day in which that time period I'm going to set it aside. You can think about it in ways in which you will get it off for entire days or longer periods of time. And something that can help you with fasting is to get it off of you and away from you. Put it in a drawer, put it in a different room, turn it completely off, and so forth. Third is to use it as a tool. Be creative. You know, there's some ways in which we tend to always get defensive about how we're going to manage distractions. I'm going to cut this out and I'm going to stop doing this and so forth. And there's some ways in which going on the offense can sometimes help us, I think. So we start to be creative. We stop and think, how am I going to use it as a tool instead of it being this consuming thing that I just take from? I'm going to use it. How am I going to use my device for kingdom advancement, for blessing people in the kingdom? I'm going to look for opportunities in which I can use it to encourage people. Every day I'm going to message somebody in my local church in which I'm going to just use words of blessing on them. Every day I'm going to message somebody who is serving away from home or whatever. Go on the offense and find ways in which you can use your technology as a tool. And then fourth, I offer consider eternity. Peter Kraft says, clicking, scrolling, tapping, liking, sharing, anything. We think we want peace and silence and freedom and leisure. But deep down, we know that this would be an unendurable to us. In fact, what we want to do is to complexify our lives. We don't have to, we want to. We want to be harried and hassled and busy. Unconsciously, we want the very thing we complain about. For if we had leisure, we would look at ourselves and we would listen to our hearts and we'd see the great gaping hole in our hearts and be terrified because that hole is so big that nothing but God can fill it. Let's do a little exercise. Take your right hand and hold it up in front of you. Notice the width of your hand. And now imagine a point a mile off to the side from it. That's where time began. Way back there. And here's your hand. And now imagine that line continuing from that point a mile off through your hand and on, and it never ends. You can't see where it goes. That's eternity ahead. Now think about this image while I read from Psalm chapter 39. Lord, make me to know my end. What is the measure of my days, that I may know how frail I am? Indeed, you have made my days as a hand's breadth, and my age is as nothing before you. You can put your hands down. As Tony Ranke says in 12 Ways Your Phone Is Changing You, nothing puts social media and smartphone habits into context like the blunt reality of our own mortality. Let it sink in a bit, feel the brevity of life, and then let it make you feel fully alive. Spaces of silence. What does silence do for us? How is silence clarifying? First, silence often invokes self-reflection. What is the truth about who I am? About how I'm doing? About where I'm headed? Dallas Willard says, silence is frightening because it strips us as nothing else does, throwing us upon the stark realities of our life. You know, many believe the mantra, all is well, as long as the noise in their lives drowns out any sort of honest self-evaluation. Kierkegaard wrote, if I could prescribe just one remedy for all of the ills in the modern world, I would prescribe silence. For even if the word of God were proclaimed in the modern world, no one would hear it. There is too much noise. Therefore, create silence. Secondly, intentional silence masters our restlessness. Western capitalism would have us believe that if we're not doing something, we're lazy or we're missing out. We're falling behind. But perhaps that's a lie. Maybe the proverbial rat race actually doesn't have any end. Spending periods of intentional silence deliberately steps out of that flow of common pressures and provides an opportunity to clarify our guiding priorities. And third, silence gives us a chance to our spiritual ears to open. So it helps us to listen. Many times when God speaks, it is little more than an impression in our minds or a settled peace in our spirits. In a loud world, it's extremely easy to miss these gentle directives. This reality is portrayed powerfully in Elijah's encounter with God in 1 Kings 19. And after God is not displayed in the power and the noise, it says he wasn't there, he chooses to speak to Elijah through a still, small whisper. Would there be any moments in your day in which you would be able to hear it if God spoke to you in that silent communication? Slow me down. Slow me down, Lord. Ease the pounding of my heart by the quieting of my mind. Steady my hurried pace with a vision of the eternal march of time. Give me, amid the confusion of the day, the calmness of the eternal hills. Break the tension of my nerves and muscles with the soothing music of the singing streams that live in my memory. Help me to know the magical restoring power of sleep. Teach me the art of taking minute vacations, of slowing down to look at a flower, to chat with a friend, to pat a dog, to read a few lines in a good book. Slow me down, Lord, and inspire me to send my roots deep into the soil of life's enduring values, that I may grow toward the stars of my greater destiny. Remind me each day that the race is not always to the swift, and that there is more to life than increasing speed. Let me look upward to the towering oak and know that it grew great and strong because it grew slowly and well. So where do we start? Our days are invariably going to be filled with noise. How do we begin to work against that unavoidable reality? You know, on a daily routine level, we can think in terms of creating pockets of silence, spaces within a day in which intentionally I'm going to choose to block out the noise. Perhaps drive time can be your quiet time, your silence, an opportunity to sit in silence. Sometimes that might lead into prayer, but that doesn't have to be the intention. Maybe it's to listen instead of to speak. Perhaps emails and messages can be compartmentalized to a specific time of the day when you're going to check them. You could shut your phone off or not worry about it because you know when you're going to next check it in the pre-chosen time slot. Perhaps on especially loud days, as soon as the children are dismissed, you're going to have to go find a quiet spot And that quiet spot might be in your car, or it might be out under a tree somewhere, or walking down the road. Maybe a 10-minute walk every morning could be the silence you need to clarify your heart, your mind, your spirit for the day. On more periodic occasions, or on thinking a longer-term level, you might think in terms of planning occasional silent hours, or silent afternoons, or maybe even silent days, entire days. Perhaps it would be a walk in the woods on a Sunday afternoon, or maybe it's leaving school after dismissal to go find a graveyard to sit in, just to be silent, just to let the silence clarify some things again. Maybe once or twice a year, you could plan a day to go spend in a forest or by a river somewhere. I'm going to give you a chance to sit in silence here real shortly. I don't really care if you stay here or if you go and find a different spot for the time being. I challenge you, though, to use it for true silence. Don't feel the need to write. Don't feel the need to plan changes to your life. Don't even feel the need to pray. Hope I'm not heretical there. You know, working through a prayer list is right. It's good. It's proper. But it's you speaking. Even prayer can be noise. Perhaps rather than God wanting you to speak to Him right now, He's wanting to speak to you. So simply think. Meditate. Silence is a gift. A gift of refreshment, of clarity, of direction. Enjoy sitting in it. Sit in it long enough to work your way through the awkwardness of the beginning. Much of the world is and will continue to be a noise-saturated environment. Silence offers an antidote to that senses-deadening power of noise. And so I leave you with the admonition of the psalmist, be still, and in being still, you will know that I am God.
This recording and many others are available through Christian Learning Resource, the campus bookstore at Faith Builders. Order online at www.christianlearning.org or call 877-222-4769.